You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings 12, this is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. It's officially Combine Week, and I'm fired up to be recording this week's shows from next door to Lucas Oil Stadium here in Indianapolis. I'll be covering the event all week as prospects work out and Pete Carroll and John Schneider speak with the media. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. This truly is the week that ushers in the NFL offseason full throttle. It turns everything up a notch or two. And up to this point, it's been a fairly quiet offseason for the Seahawks. It's been 6 weeks since they lost that divisional round game against the Packers and ended the 2019 season. As promised by Carroll in his end-of-the-year press conference, Seattle has made minimal changes to the coaching staff. Really not a surprise there. The only significant addition was adding longtime NFL assistant and former Washington Husky star Sanjay Lal earlier this month to replace Steve Shimko. As for the roster, with the exception of signing veteran tight end Greg Olsen last week, nothing else has really happened. There haven't been any extensions for players like Jadeveon Clowney, Jaren Reed, no new contracts for somebody like Shaquille Griffin, Chris Carson. There haven't been any cap casualties either. They haven't moved on from any players that would open up some cap space for them to use in free agency. Those type of moves could still happen before the start of the new year on March 18th. But when all 32 teams descend onto Indy for Combine Week, that is when everything gets real. And it's not just because the NFL's future is here to run 40-yard dashes, pump 225 pounds on the bench press, and run some on-field drills. Obviously, those things have some importance to a varying degree. Depends what position you're looking at, too. But this week is important for teams like the Seahawks for many other reasons, as John Schneider has alluded to in the past. They use this week to get medicals and interview players. Those are arguably the two most important things that happened this week in regard to pre-draft evaluation. Just look at the past couple of years. 2 years ago, they interviewed Michael Dixon at the Combine. They forced him to do a staring contest. He must have met their requirements because they traded up to pick him. And people were giving the Seahawks some flack for that. You traded up to select a punter. He was named All-Pro as a rookie. Turned out to be a great selection for them. Then last year, DK Metcalf is told by a Seahawks staffer to go into his meeting without a shirt on. Carroll decides to show off his guns and takes his shirt off after Metcalf comes in. That's the kind of stuff that you can expect with this Seahawks team and their staff. And they ended up drafting Metcalf after he fell to the back part of the second round. They traded into the final slot there at pick number 64 and picked him. Coincidence? I think not. There's also a number of things going on behind closed doors right now that's not going to be evident to the public. You were able to see that video eventually of Carroll taking his shirt off when Metcalf came into the room. Those type of things eventually come out, but there's a lot of things you won't hear about that are going on behind the scenes between various teams, agents, stuff like that. Schneider is developing two separate draft boards, one for the prospects Seattle has interest in for each round, and a big board for how they expect other teams to function, what they're going to be looking for, what players they are interested in. And this is key for Schneider's ability to master trading down and acquiring picks, and he is very damn good at it. Among other reasons this week really matters, agents make their way to Indianapolis too. You better believe negotiations with free agents are ongoing here in Indianapolis, and sometimes trades can be orchestrated between the walls of Lucas Oil and the convention center. You never know how things are going to unfold. You may see a move or two this week. Could it involve the Seahawks? You never know. With an abundance of cap space, it can't be ruled out, and you know that John Schneider and Pete Carroll are always exploring everything. If they get an offer for a solid veteran player that isn't going to cost them too much, they're going to consider it. And so it can't be ruled out that a trade could happen this week. There are a lot of questions that are going to remain unanswered throughout this week. Jadeveon Clowney, probably not going to be hearing any news about him signing extension. He's going to want to test free agency. Jaren Reed's probably the same weight, defensive tackle. Jermaine Ifedi, a lot of the players the Seahawks have that are entering free agency, they are going to hit the market on March 18th. That does not mean that one or a few of those guys are not going to be retained by Seattle, but I wouldn't expect that type of news. Still, this is a week that is very critical for the franchise's offseason blueprint as it starts to take shape in the Circle City, and they're hoping that will set the stage for what Seattle will do in free agency as well as the draft in an effort to get back to the Super Bowl next season. Coming up next in the second quarter, it's time for our Monday mailbag here on Locked On Seahawks. You guys have tons of draft-related questions, combine-related questions, you name it. I'm going to try to answer as many of them as I can. I'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Before we move forward, let's talk about sex. Good sex. Remember the days when you were always ready to go and you could increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed? Listen up. BlueChew.com. That's blue like the color blue. BlueChew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Now, this isn't just for guys who can't perform. It's for any guy who wants extra function to enhance their performance in the bedroom. Blue Chew is prescribed online and ships straight to your door in a discreet package. So no in-person doctor's visit, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use our special promo code LOCKEDON. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com. Promo code LOCKEDON to try for free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the podcast. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. This is Corbin Smith hosting from Indianapolis, where the NFL Scouting Combine is officially kicked off. Coming up later in the show, I'm going to take a look at a few prospects who have been mocked to the Seahawks this week. As you'd expect, it's all about defense in the mock draft world. It's time to open up the Locked On Seahawks mailbag first. Tons of free agency and draft questions, plus plenty of combine discussion. Let's get to it. First question coming from Jackson. He writes, Corbin, did you see Christian Michael's touchdown on Sunday? He was so gifted. Why didn't he make it in the league? Well, I get this question a lot because Christian Michael obviously had a sensational combine back in 2013 coming out of Texas A&M. A lot of his numbers stacked up favorably against a player by the name of Adrian Peterson. And so he was drawing raving reviews with his athletic profile. And this is a guy that had some pretty good production at Texas A&M. He did have some injuries when he was in college, but when healthy, he showed off that athletic ability on the gridiron. And that's where the problem was in the NFL. You just didn't see that physical skill set he brought to the table. You didn't see it really show up on the football field very much in Seattle. And it didn't help him that when he was drafted, he still had Marshawn Lynch in front of him. And Lynch was far from being done. Lynch had a couple really nice seasons in 2013 and 2014. And that prevented Michael from really being able to get many opportunities. And when he did get chances, you saw a lot of the same things, bad vision in the backfield, reading his blocks, stumbling and bumbling. I've never seen a running back that struggled so much to keep his balance without being hit by a defender, just constantly tripping over himself, and he's still doing that in the XFL. Ball security issues, it drove me nuts as a former running back coach to watch him run the ball to the left and have the football in his right hand. Makes it so much easier for the defender to try to punch that football out, and he never really learned how to do that. Again, you still see a lot of these habits in the XFL playing for the St. Louis Battlehawks, and that's why approaching the age of 30, he's not going to get another chance to play in the NFL. He played for a bunch of different teams, and he just wasn't able to turn the corner, and you got to see what he's capable of doing on one play Sunday for the Battlehawks, but at the end of the day, it just never was able to live up to the physical tools that he brought to the table. Was never able to really take advantage of those in the backfield. Second question coming from Life Lessons writes, this year's offensive line class appears to be the best it's been in years. Do you think the first two rounds could be used on offensive linemen? I believe that Life Lessons is asking about those first three picks that the Seahawks have in the first two rounds. I could see two of the first three picks being used on offensive linemen, especially if pass rushers go off the board quickly, as I've talked about numerous times. Rob Rangs also mentioned this as well. This is kind of a top-heavy pass rusher class. Once you have Kalavon Chaisson and Yetur Gross-Matos and a few of those other players off the board, there's a big drop-off. There's still some quality edge rushers that'll be available on day two. I just don't know that you're going to want to reach and take one of those players in the first round. And this is a really deep tackle and center class. And both those positions could be needs for the Seahawks, depending how Justin Britt recovers. And if they choose to hang on to him, as we've talked about, there's always the possibility he could be a cap casualty for the Seahawks. So just to throw a few names out there at the tackle position, probably my favorite player that would be available potentially that late. I don't think Mekhi Becton has any chance of getting to pick 27. Tackle out of Louisville would be the ideal pick, but he's going to go earlier than that. But if you're looking at players that could be available when Seattle's on the clock, Josh Jones out of Houston, probably my favorite prospect. He's kind of raw, but what an athlete that you have at the tackle position. Good length. He would be a nice addition on that offensive line. Austin Jackson out of USC is a player that I think has fringe first-round ability. Prince Tagovailoa out of Auburn's another player that I think early second, mid-second rounds, probably where he's going to fall. And Lucas Niang out of TCU is a player that's kind of moving up draft boards a little bit. Had a pretty good final season with the Horned Frogs. He's a guy that I've seen mocked to the Seahawks in drafts that have gone beyond the first round. I've seen him picked in the second round with one of those two selections on several mock drafts. So maybe he's a player that the Seahawks get in the first two rounds. And then at the center position, Cesar Ruiz, Tyler Biadasz out of Wisconsin, and Lloyd Cushenberry, the third out of LSU. Those are three names to really keep an eye on. There are some other centers in this class beyond the second and third round. It's a very deep class at that position. Seattle could try to draft as a developmental player. If they hang on to Justin Britt for one more season, they could draft their starter for the future later in the draft. But Ruiz, Biadasz, and Cushenberry are three guys I think could come in right away and play for the Seahawks if they chose to move on from Britt. Third question, Jim Daly tweets, where do you think Seattle will draft one of these great receivers? Even late second round, they can grab a solid contributor for year one, but do you think they wait longer than round two? Well, Jim, your guess is as good as mine. I mean, we saw the Seahawks be aggressive with going after DK Metcalf last year. I think there is a really large drop-off when you look at the Seahawks depth chart. Obviously, Lockett and Metcalf give the Seahawks a dynamic 1-2 punch at receiver, but David Moore is a restricted free agent. Jerron Brown's an unrestricted free agent. Who knows if they're going to bring either one of those players back? I would think Moore has a much better chance of playing because all they have to do is place a tender on him, and then he would be on the roster barring another team signing him to an offer sheet and giving up a draft pick. That could happen, but I think that he has a better chance of being back in Seattle. John Ursua had one catch as a rookie. I think he's got a lot of upside, but we don't know what he's capable of doing in the NFL, really, because he only played a handful of snaps last year. And Malik Turner is a former undrafted free agent signing that has exceeded expectations. I just don't know how high his ceiling is. He's done some really good things on special teams. He's made some nice plays. He also had a couple huge drops at the end of last year. I just don't know that you want to go into the season with him being one of your top four receivers. So I certainly think there is a need at that position, and as deep as this class is, John Schneider is somebody that always knows how to approach value at certain positions. I would not be surprised if they use one of those first three picks on a receiver, especially when you've got guys like Van Jefferson and Brandon Ayuk that could potentially be available in the second round that are big-time talents. And there are a number of other guys that could be available later, like Antonio Golden-Gandy out of Liberty. There are a lot of really good receivers in this class. So they could be aggressive and pick one in the early stages of this draft, go after a big fish, or they could wait and try to get one or two receivers later in the draft, and you would still get pretty good value because this is a very deep class. It all depends how things shake out with the edge rushers. If they're able to pick one of those good edge rushers early, that's going to have a domino effect on what they pick the rest of the draft as far as tackles, receivers, and other positions. Eric Wolfgang Pinto tweets, chance we use the franchise tag on anyone this year? Eric, I really think that it's slim chance that they're going to be using a franchise tag this year. Anybody that's paid attention knows Jadeveon Clowney, when he was traded to the Seahawks, part of the agreement was that Seattle would not use the franchise tag on him again, so that is not an option. They can't franchise tag Clowney. Jaron Reed would be more than $15 million this year to tag. I can't see them doing that. Same for Jermaine Ifedi. I definitely can't see them doing that. They weren't willing to pick up his fifth-year option for a little over $10 million. Can't see them doing that and putting a franchise tag on Ifedi. So I really don't see either one of those players receiving the tag unless the Seahawks truly believe a long-term deal is imminent and they need a little more time. And I just don't see that happening. So the Seahawks have rarely used the franchise tag under John Schneider. Last year, they used it on Frank Clark. There had been a huge gap between the last time they used it on Olindo Mare way back in the day. So they just don't typically use it. I don't expect them to use it going into this offseason. Zane Huffman tweets, chances Seattle signs P.J. Walker. Secondly, who would be a late-round pick candidate to groom at quarterback behind Russell Wilson? Well, first, let's answer the first question here. P.J. Walker, man, what an impressive showing that he has had so far playing for the Houston Roughnecks in the XFL, and I continue to really enjoy the product that they're throwing out there on Saturday and Sunday doubleheaders. I've been watching as many of those games as I can, and he has been the front runner, the clear-cut MVP of the league to this point. I actually would really love this fit with him being Russell Wilson's backup, because you could run the same scheme if somehow Wilson got banged up and you needed your backup to play. This has been a position that basically you've been getting paid to just stand with a clipboard. Backups have never had to come in because Russell Wilson's been so durable, but if Walker had to play, he's athletic, he's a good scrambler, he's shown that he can make a lot of the throws you need to make to play in the NFL. But now really the big question for him, do you want to go back to the NFL just to be a backup and not play? Or do you want to stay in the XFL and continue getting reps with hopes that eventually you can start in the league? And I'm thinking about back when Warren Moon was in the CFL and was just killing it in the CFL, played there for 6 years before he finally made it back to the NFL. Doug Flutie played in the CFL for a long time, then finally got a chance to go back to the NFL after playing a lot of snaps. There might actually be a benefit to a player like P.J. Walker of coming back to the XFL and continuing to play and put up big numbers, and eventually maybe an NFL team says, okay, you've gotten a lot of reps, you've played a lot of football, we're going to invest a contract and bring you in to compete for a starting job. I think until he gets that opportunity, maybe he would be smart to consider staying in the XFL. At the same time, you're going to make more money as a backup in the NFL. So could be a potentially tough decision for him. As far as draft options go, Seattle drafted a quarterback a few years ago in Alex Magoo. He didn't last. He was not even with the team during most of his rookie season. He was on the practice squad and then ended up bouncing around with a couple teams last year. So he's not even with the Seahawks anymore. Not to say they won't draft somebody. If they were going to, a few names that jumped out to me. Kelly Bryant from Missouri might be intriguing. Formerly was a starter for Clemson. Lost his starting job there a few years ago. Transferred to Missouri. He's a guy that's pretty athletic, decent arm, maybe a developmental player you could draft, maybe even sign undrafted. I'm not sure he will go in the draft. James Morgan out of FIU, Florida International, makes some sense too. He also played some snaps at Bowling Green earlier in his career, so he's got quite a bit of game film for them to look at. Shea Patterson, Old Miss in Michigan, I don't know that I would necessarily draft him, but he's another player maybe as an undrafted invite you could bring in to compete for a backup job. I don't see this being a huge priority for Seattle. I think they're going to look at bringing back Geno Smith. Maybe they'll look at another veteran to compete against him, but I'm not sure that this is the year that they go back into the well of drafting and developing a quarterback. Last question here real quick, coming from Jax Boyd. He tweets, is signing Dez Bryant to come play for Seattle something John Schneider would be interested in doing? Well, Jax, I'm not seeing it. Bryant didn't play at all last year. He's on the wrong side of 30. The last time that he was in the league, he tore his Achilles the first week he was practicing with the Saints. He had a really good run coming out of Oklahoma State, playing for the Cowboys, made some Pro Bowls, was a really good player, and I think he'll get another shot. I just don't think Seattle is where it's going to be at. I think they have a lot of other ways that they can try to bolster depth at receiver. Bringing him in just wouldn't make much sense. There are some other veterans out there that maybe I could see, but I just don't see them bringing him in. Even if sitting out last year really got him rejuvenated and he's eager to play, I just don't see this being a good fit at this point, really, for either side, unless he's willing to come in for league minimum, and I don't think he's going to want to do that. So I just don't see it. Coming up next in the third quarter, it's Mock Draft Monday. Looking at a bunch of different mock drafts all around the internet, and the main theme here, the Seahawks need to go after the defensive line. I'm going to look through several of the players projected to go to the Seahawks at number 27. When we return, you're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Welcome back. Glad to have you joining me on the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, coming from Indianapolis. Mock draft season is well underway, and I've always found this week to be very interesting when it comes to the perception of prospects. You'll be surprised how much workouts in compression shorts sway a lot of well-informed people when they make mock drafts next week with the combine in the rearview mirror. You can expect some large-scale changes that maybe aren't necessarily needed, but that's what makes this process fun, right? Scanning this week's mock draft radar, it's very apparent that everyone expects a defensive lineman to be taken by the Seahawks in the first round, and why not? They had one of the worst pass rushes in football last year, and that was with Jaron Reed and Jadeveon Clowney, who are both free agents. This group clearly needs reinforcements both inside and out. Whether Reed or Clowney both return or one comes back, whatever, they're going to need to add some talent to that defensive line in the interior as well as the defensive end positions. Looking at some of the mock drafts that have come out here in the past few days heading into the NFL scouting combine, let's start with CBS Sports as well as NFL.com. Both of those mock drafts this week have the Seahawks taking an interior defensive lineman, Ross Blacklock out of TCU. Now, some of you may be listening and thinking, hey, we picked the TCU defensive lineman last year. LJ Collier, he made three tackles as a rookie. You have to just completely eliminate the school factor here and just look at the prospect. This is a very good player. 6'4", 305 pounds, a disruptive interior defender. He commands double teams. He can rush the passer a bit. Looking at his stats last year, 40 tackles, 3.5 sacks, 9 tackles for loss. So this is a player that brings a lot of really good skills to the table. And the thing that always stands out to me when I watch TCU film, their defensive line in general, those players play with a motor across the board. You have to play for Gary Patterson, and this guy has as good of a motor as any defensive lineman in this class. And so I've emphasized this in my scouting report. Motor, motor, motor. I can't tell you how many times I've seen this guy flying 8 to 10 yards away from his spot to make plays. He's always pursuing the ball. He's got violent hands at the point of attack and a quick first step. And that really the thing that impresses me about this kid watching on film is his ability to change direction at 300 plus pounds. He's got very fluid hips, quickness in and out of breaks, and he has enough versatility to me, even though I think he's going to be at his best in a system like Seattle where he's a three-tech, one-gap defensive tackle. I think he has enough versatility to be able to be a two-gap player playing the nose position occasionally if needed. I think he could grow into a player that could play both roles for a team. In Seattle, I would expect he's going to be playing that three-tech spot. As far as cons, first thing that jumps out to me, injury red flags are certainly warranted. He did not play at all in 2018, had an Achilles injury. He's really only played 2 years of college football. So I do have some concerns about his ability to attack blocks to the next level. His pad level is something that worries me as well. He'll play too high time to time with that 6'4" frame. Technique's going to need some refinement. Really, the most notable thing that I observed watching several TCU games is that a lot of times he was winning with his quickness and his athletic ability. Didn't seem like he had really mastered any counter moves to work off of his bull rush as a pass rusher, and that's something he's going to have to develop to really unlock his potential getting after the quarterback at the NFL level. But he certainly has the athleticism and the hand technique to be able to develop those skills in the NFL. Now swinging to the next mock draft here on my list, NBC Sports, another guy that can get after the quarterback, Zach Bond out of Wisconsin. This is a really interesting prospect because you look at the size, and that's the first thing that I kind of had to circle a little bit. He's only 6'3", 240 pounds, and he didn't have many sacks early in his career. This is a guy that went to Wisconsin primarily known as a quarterback, but he wasn't able to get on the field as a signal caller for the Badgers, carved out a role on defense, and really turned himself into a really good defensive player, a second-team All-American as a senior for Wisconsin. Came on strong as a pass rusher with 12.5 sacks, had 19.5 tackles for loss. He was among the nation's leaders in both categories last year, so really had a breakout senior season. Kind of a late bloomer at the same time, looks to me like a player that maybe is just scratching the surface of his potential. After watching games against Ohio State and Minnesota, a couple notes that I put down here as far as pros. First thing that jumps out, This is an outstanding cover linebacker. He's listed as an edge defender, but looking at his size, 6'3", 240, this is a player that I think actually fits the Sam linebacker role for the Seahawks, maybe more than playing that Leo position. He could rush off the edge. He's big enough to do that in pass rushing situations, but I think you could actually make this guy a full-time Sam linebacker. In Seattle's system, he had a grade of 80 or better each of the last two seasons from Pro Football Focus for his coverage. So this is a really good cover guy that held his own covering running backs and tight ends. So I've really been impressed with what I've seen from him in that facet of his game, and he's really just coming into his own as a rusher. He's got elite flexibility to turn the corner. He's a nightmare for tackles when he's bending around the corner to go after quarterbacks. A devastating first step. He can blow by tackles, and he'll smack people. This guy plays with intensity and a mean streak that I absolutely love. He's got an old-school kind of game as a hitter, coupled with that athletic ability. He's always in attack mode, sideline to sideline, another guy with a great motor. So all of those skills are great. But when you're looking at the cons, there's a couple things that immediately jump out that don't even have anything to do with his skill set. And I mentioned the size. To me, that's the biggest concern here. 240 pounds, you're not going to be an every down edge defender in this league. There's simply no way you can do it. He's too small. And I'm not sure that his frame suits him to bulk up much either. So I don't think he's an edge defender full-time in this league. I mentioned the Sam position. I actually think that he's got a Bruce Irvin-type game to him in the Seattle Seahawks defense. I think you can move him to that Sam linebacker spot. He can blitz off the edge. We've seen the success that Michael Kendricks had last year getting 3 sacks there. I think Bond is going to be a big nightmare for tackles at that position, and he's got the coverage skills to be able to play there as well. So it would make a lot of sense at 27. I think he's going to have to develop a better toolbox as a pass rusher. He wins a lot of the time with his athletic ability and his motor, and that's not going to be as effective in the NFL. He's going to have to develop some counters off of that to go with his speed, with his burst, his ability to turn the corner. You can't be a one-trick pony and consistently get to the quarterback. He's going to have to add some things, some elements to his pass rushing toolbox to really be able to get a bunch of sacks in the NFL. But you certainly see the potential there, and you see the football instincts, you see the motor. We've seen the Seahawks have a lot of success over the years with tweeners who have maybe looked positionless at the next level. Bond could be that next guy for the Seahawks. And again, I view that Bruce Irvin Sam linebacker role, that is where this guy would really fit. And if they were going to use him in that capacity, given the lack of depth for edge defenders in this class, I think going with Bond at number 27 would be a reasonable pick on a player that is really just scratching the surface of his potential. Last mock draft here on our Mock Draft Monday. This one's from the Bleacher Report, staying on the defensive line. Justin Madibuke out of Texas A&M. He's a defensive tackle. I'm going to be honest with you right up front. I think Blacklock is a better prospect than what Madibuke is. And the big reason why is the run game. I look at this kid. He's 6'3", 304 pounds. So he's a little bit undersized, really not much different size-wise than Blacklock, but the way that he's built, he looks leaner, lower body especially, that concerns me a little bit. But I could see him filling that Jaron Reed role, playing the three-tech position. Seattle's scheme would be a good fit for him, and he has shown flashes of being a really good pass rusher from the interior. He had 5.5 sacks last year, 5.5 sacks the year before. So he's been consistently able to get after the quarterback, 11 sacks past two seasons. If Seattle wants a natural replacement for Reed's pass rushing skills, this is the guy at this stage of the draft that could maybe do that. And big reason he's been so successful, he's got a very sudden first step for a 300-pound defensive tackle. He knows how to make himself narrow, splitting gaps. Good lower body power. Even though he's lean in the lower body, he's got good power and he wins with pad level. He stays low, and that helps him as a pass rusher. But as far as concerns go, again, I mentioned size with Bond on the outside. I look in the interior with this kid. I worry about his size and his lack of length. When I compare him to Blacklock, he's less productive and consistent as a run defender. He doesn't always time his jump well off the snap. Stronger blockers can expose him. He's not going to eat up double teams like Jaron Reed proved he could do during his time in Seattle. And even Blacklock was really effective against double teams at the college level. I felt like Madibuke really struggled in that capacity of his game. This is not a player with much two-gap potential. He's going to be somebody that plays that three-tech position and strictly is a one-gap player because of his size. I look at the mobility and the fluidity. It's very good for a player of his size, maybe even elite at that position. He's had flashes where he's been a wrecking ball. His athleticism is apparent. But this does seem like a bit more of a reach at number 27, especially from a run defense standpoint. If the Seahawks trade down and take him, then it would make a lot more sense to me. But I actually like the other two picks in the other mock drafts better at number 27 in terms of value and scheme fit for the Seahawks. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at CorbinSmithNFL. If you'd like to be a featured sponsor of the Locked On Seahawks podcast, you can contact me, LockedSeahawks@gmail.com. Make sure to subscribe to our show on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever your preferred podcast platform is by going to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Coming up in tomorrow's Tuesday show, Rob Rang and I will discuss what to expect from tight ends and receivers of the Combine, look back at some of the top Combine performances by current and former Seahawks, and much more. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Go Hawks!